Morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone in your respective parts of the world. This is going to be a little bit different for this week because I'm just going to focus on the situation with the deplatforming and the parlor and the Gab and the Trump and this sort of stuff. Because I think it's a really, really fascinating topic for many, many reasons. Like politics aside, politics is part of what makes it really fascinating. But as I've been tweeting stuff about it over the last, I guess, week and a bit since the Capitol building storming, there's just been some really, really interesting stuff that floated to the surface. And I've just been like making notes and putting more and more things into this list. And I really want to talk about those. And I'd encourage everyone to leave some comments or some feedback as well. I'm particularly interested for folks in other parts of the world as well, like me, other parts being non-US, how they view this. So yeah, thanks for the hellos and the congratulations and things in the live stream chat window there. Do start chiming in as I go through this probably unprecedented, I think it's reasonable to say, series of events as they happened in the cyberspace over last week. And I think one of the first things that really struck me, and I do have a heap of references here, all of these will go into a larger blog post for this week's update afterwards. But one of the things that seems to have been a cornerstone of this entire debate is this thing about free speech. Now, I'll try and put this politely. Americans get very upset about free speech. All right, just come out and say it. We have free speech in lots of parts of the world. We have constitutions in lots of parts of the world. I think we have one here. It's probably okay. We don't get too uppity about it. Most people just go about their daily lives. But the premise of free speech is pretty much the same here as it is in the US, as it is in the UK, as it is in Norway, in most parts, certainly of the Western world. Very, very similar sort of premise. But one of the things that I ended up going away and doing a bit of research on because I thought it was quite fascinating, but one of the things that I've found extremely frustrating to watch over the last week is this idea that free speech means you get to say whatever you want, wherever you want, no consequences, YOLO, we'll just free speech the hell out of everything. And it just doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way in America either. Now, let me delve into that a little bit because there is, of course, a Wikipedia page on free speech in the US. Now, one of the things, and just to go tangential for a moment, one of the things you'll see popping up a little bit here is that so much of this discussion is US-centric. Now, of course, that's where there's been the political shenanigans that we've seen, I was going to say, over the last week, let's be honest, over the last 4 and a bit years. But we are talking about global platforms with global audiences. And the US is about 4% of the world's population. This might come as a shock to some people in America, but there's a massive, massive audience around the world dependent on the same platforms we're talking about here, but they get very, very defined by US politics and things that are going on over there. Now, on the free speech thing. So, good Wikipedia page here. Now, this is United States free speech, and in particular, United States free speech exceptions. So there is free speech, but, and the but is really important because to my point before, free speech is not like I get to say whatever I want, wherever I want, and no one can take it away and nothing happens to me if I say it. Now, the exceptions are really interesting. Categories of speech that are given lesser or no protection by the First Amendment and therefore may be restricted include obscenity. Tell you what, you get in trouble here. Obscenity. Apparently, obscenity is not protected free speech. Child pornography seems reasonable. Fraud, to be clear, making that restricted seems reasonable. Speech integral to illegal conduct. Speech that incites imminent lawless action. Now, that's the big one that's going to come up throughout the rest of this video. Speech that violates intellectual property law, true threats, and commercial speech such as advertising. And this goes on and on and on with examples and legal precedents as well of where certain types of speech are not free and are not protected. Now, multiple different examples here, but, you know, there's a good one here. Incitement to suicide. You shouldn't be able to go out there and incite people to kill themselves. And no one should be able to stand up and go, oh, but it's my right, it's my free speech to be able to try and convince this person to kill themselves. Like that does not seem to be a reasonable position to take. Now, one of the things that will come up over and over and over again in this chat is this definition of, it's almost like community standards of what would your average person think is reasonable. Now, your average person would not think it's reasonable to convince other people to top themselves. There are some people that probably do think that's okay. They're dicks. They're not your average person. There's always going to be outlying sentiments. So incitement to suicide, that's a good example here. Incitement to imminent lawless action. I find this one particularly interesting. And one of the things we see come up a lot on the free speech bit is the word incitement and the term imminent lawless action. This is not protected speech. If you're inciting people to commit imminent lawless action, you got big problems. So loads of examples around here. And I just feel like unless people can sort of get on top of this concept that free speech doesn't mean anything, it's impossible then to have the discussion about which social media accounts should be banned or which platforms should be taken offline. Like, get that through your head if you're up there going, free speech, free speech. A few other examples here on the Wikipedia page are interesting. Things like fighting words. So fighting words, defined by the court, is speech that tends to incite an imminent breach of the peace by provoking a fight. And there's some examples here that are probably best looked at on the Wikipedia page. Again, I'll link to that. The title is United States Free Speech Exceptions. There's also some examples here, threatening the President of the United States. You don't have free speech to do that. The opposite, well, turns out you don't have free speech to do that either. So anyway, we'll come back to that. But, you know, speech owned by others. So things like copyright. It's like, let's say someone does some amazing speech or creates a play or something like that. You can't just go and say, all right, I'm going to rebrand this as my own and go out there and say it. That just seems to be, again, perfectly reasonable. So first thing there. Now, looking at the comments here as well. Thanks, Dylan. He likes Fridge. Nice to have you here, mate. So that's the first bit. Now, as it relates to online platforms and individuals and organizations, there's a long history of accounts being nuked and platforms being nuked, not because we don't like free speech, but because they violate this definition of free speech. And there's a good example here in my notes, and I'll just read this out verbatim. During 2014, there was an estimated 46,000 to 90,000 Twitter accounts that advocated for ISIS or were run by supporters of the group. In 2015, Twitter reported that it banned 125,000 ISIS sympathetic accounts. In 2016, it published an update of 325,000 accounts deleted. Now, is this silencing free speech, or is this trying to keep recalcitrant, potentially extremely damaging content offline? I think, again, the reasonable person test, we're going to defer to the latter. There are many examples of that. I'll give you an example here. Much more recently, much more locally, which has also raised the ire of the free speech. I'm going to start air quoting that because it doesn't mean what people think it means when they say it. The free speech proponents. There's a bloke here in Australia. He's a celebrity chef. He's a guy called Pete Evans. And Pete doesn't really think coronavirus is real. there's not a more polite way of putting it. And he's been very outspoken for many years, even prior to coronavirus, around some of his dietary recommendations and things as well. Now, as far as I know, he's a good chef. He makes a nice roast, like whatever it is a good chef does now, but he knows nothing about diet and he knows nothing about certainly endemics or pandemics. Now, he got booted off Facebook in December. Celebrity chef Pete Evans' Facebook page has been permanently removed after he repeatedly breached the social media network's misinformation policies with posts about COVID-19. Now, I saw one of his posts recently. He was sharing a cartoon which said, effectively, coronavirus is the flu with a good marketing campaign. It's like except for the exceptionally large numbers of dead people and destroyed lives, yeah, maybe. So it's misinformation. And in a case like this, what is the risk of misinformation? Well, the risk of misinformation is people in places where coronavirus is a big thing. Now, we're very, very fortunate here in Australia where there's just about none of it. So certainly where I live, nobody wears masks. We still go into all our normal stuff, but we can do that because it's just not here in this place. But in other parts of the world, like encouraging people to go out without a mask is absolutely ridiculous. Encouraging people to go out at all in some parts of the world, if you're in the UK at the moment, it's probably not a very good idea at all. So advice like this on social media, particularly when it comes from someone with an audience, is a risk to people's livelihoods. So Facebook eventually binned him. And I have a feeling, actually, he went to Parler. So I wonder where he is now. We'll come back to what's happened to Parler. So there's another good example. Now, this is not a political thing. This is what you're saying might cause people to die. That is not a very good thing. Now, I'm not sure what banner that comes under in Australia. If it was indeed Facebook's Australia arm, certainly the Blokes Australia, that binned him. But that seems reasonable under the circumstances. Of course, he got very upset and said, it's, you know, against free speech, etc. Point being, again, another precedent. Other websites as well. And I'm going to finish the free speech bit in a moment, and then I'll have a look at some of the comments here. I was thinking back to what are other websites which we've seen binned over recent years. And there are two that came immediately to mind. One was the Daily Stormer. So Daily Stormer, white supremacist website, Cloudflare finally killed them in August 2017. They'd already been dropped by GoDaddy, Google, YouTube, and Two Cows. Remember Two Cows? Apparently Two Cows is actually still a thing. But point is, they were kicked off for inciting violence. Now, there was actually a lot of controversy at the time, specifically directed at Cloudflare and Matthew Prince, the CEO, for not taking action earlier. So there's this great big barrage of people saying you should boot them off because otherwise you're a Nazi. And I'll come back to these like blanket terms shortly as well. You should boot them off because they're inciting violence. They have recalcitrant views. We just don't need this stuff on the internet. And then, of course, you get the other side going, yeah, but free speech. And that the line is not always clear. Now, eventually, Cloudflare, I think under more pressure than anything else, buckled and they pulled the pin. A couple of years later, 8chan. So 8chan in 2019 was finally knocked offline. Now, this came after the Christchurch Mosque massacre and also a couple of massacres in the US, culminating in the El Paso incident. So 23 people died in El Paso. The shooter posted a manifesto to 8chan shortly before he went on his rampage. And these platforms had become places where there were frankly just cesspools of violence. And I'm just raising this point again because we have a long history of deplatforming, as the term now is. Now, again, it was eventually Cloudflare that killed 8chan. I don't even know where 8chan is now. And there's probably an important thing to talk about here as well, because one of the things I keep hearing is people go, if you deplatform them, if you shut them down, they'll just go underground and then it will be harder to track. Well, first of all, good if they just go underground. Second of all, it's not really harder. So here's the premise, and this was explained to me by someone, a good mate of mine, very, very smart, when I was doing it on my holidays recently. And he was saying, let's say it's the coronavirus conspiracy stuff. Coronavirus is being spread by 5G. It's like, okay, this is bullshit, but some people believe this. You're not necessarily going to be able to change the views of the people coming up with this crap in the first place. There are people out there, I'm sure, you will never be able to sit down and have a reasonable discussion with. And if you shut down their platform, they will go to a Tor hidden service. They will take everything to Signal or Telegram. Gee, Signal and Telegram are doing well at the moment. They will go to places which are further out of the public eye. You're not changing those people, but they're a very, very tiny slice. What you are doing is you're decreasing the exposure to all these other people who are sitting on the fence going, maybe bats are carrying coronavirus over 5G, but if I don't see that content, I won't be convinced that they are. And they're the people that benefit from this. People like myself and probably most people watching this, we're never going to be convinced that coronavirus is carried over 5G. We're never going to be convinced that a lot of the other crap we've seen banned recently is legitimate. But it's not us that benefits from this, other than maybe saving our sanity. It's the people who are on the fence trying to make up their mind, and they're being bombarded by disinformation. Now, I appreciate that something like 5G causing coronavirus, that there's a pretty easy scientific basis to this, which is there isn't one. That is different to I have a political view one way or the other, and my leanings could be swayed to be more left or more right, as it is particularly in the US. So there is some discretion there and a lot of gray area. I think that's important to acknowledge. Now, I just want to look at the comments because I do want to be able to get input from people here. And of course, I publish this as a podcast as well, so people will be able to listen to it. So I'll read anything that's interesting here. Sam, here's an interesting one. He says, there is barely any discussion about free speech in Western Europe, and I'm guessing most Western countries outside of the US. Wonder why they're always talking about it there. I think someone who understands a lot more about US history than me could probably answer that well. But I always sort of get this impression that there are things that are in the Constitution that people just hold on to so dearly and make their own interpretation of. And again, other places have constitutions. Most of Europe has been around a lot longer than certainly Western colonized US has, so they've got a longer history with this stuff. Maybe it's related to things like a lot of civil war and internal conflict. One of the things I remember someone saying to me when I used to do a lot of travel to the US, and I'd lament just how different it is from state to state in the US, and they'd say that the US is less like one United States and more like 50 different countries. And I think that's very true. And it was interesting for me doing my big Around Australia tour over last month. You can go to extreme opposite ends of the country. And keep in mind, Australia is almost the same size as the US. It's very, very hard to tell the difference between someone in far north Queensland and someone down in Adelaide, which is the breadth we covered. Accent, almost identical. The way he speaks to them is very similar. The service is very similar. So, all right, there's more crocodiles there and there's more great white sharks there. But, you know, like other than that, they're basically the same people. The US is just so fundamentally different as you go from state to state, particularly as you go from, say, somewhere like California to somewhere in the middle of the country to somewhere on the East Coast. So it's just a fundamentally different place. And for those of you who haven't been to the US, when you can go, it is fascinating on many, many, many different levels. But I do think that's a really, really interesting point here about we see much less discussion about free speech in Europe, and we certainly see much less here in Australia as well. Now, Darren says, is it incitement to people not to take precautions to prevent spreading of diseases? I'm not sure what that comes under in terms of is that imminent risk to people's health? And keep in mind as well that this is a really, really important point. There is the whole thing about US Constitution, First Amendment, free speech, all that sort of thing from the legal basis. And then there's another bit, which is Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google, all of these are organizations that can define their own terms of service. They don't just operate in America. They, by virtue of being on the internet, they operate everywhere, but they have physical presences everywhere as well. So they do get to set the standard in terms of what content they want to allow on the platform. Now, maybe free speech is a superset, and then within that, they go, yeah, well, look, there's a bunch of stuff that we don't really want to have on the platform here. But it is their platform. And you don't have to be on there. And I know that people then turn around and go, yes, but because they are so predominant and they span everything, the premise of saying you don't need to use it if you don't want to doesn't really hold water because that's where all the information is. So I get that. It's not quite that simple, but it's also not like a one-to-one relationship between the platform's terms of service and the US Constitution and free speech. And again, not least of which, because these platforms run everywhere. And yes, they are HQ'd in the US, but I would argue that the majority of their users would be outside the US. I don't know the exact stats on that. It's not going to be just 4% like the US population is as part of the world. Say, for argument's sake, a third of their users are in the US. So how do we make sure that we're still relevant for the other two-thirds? Okay. Now, a few other things here in the comments. Yes, for people asking, I am going to make this all about the current, not just free speech thing, but I'm particularly going to get to the deplatforming bit. And I think some of the implications there. What else we got in here? Bits about Camaro ISP. We will get to that because it is going to get really, really interesting here in terms of how these things are actually staying alive. Scott Helmer's on here because he can't go anywhere else. He's probably in his hot tub watching this right now. Scott Helmer is in the UK. So again, I feel sympathetic for the folks there that literally can't even go outside their house most of the time at the moment. Now, there is a comment here, and I thought this would come up sooner or later. Good luck. It says, gun rights are actually privileges in other countries. The guns, and this is going to come as a shock to some people in America, but most of us can't understand what the hell the fascination is with guns. But I don't want to go off on the gun debate because it's a whole other thing. That is one of the things which is just so fundamentally different to everywhere else in the Western world, that the concept of someone let's say where I live here, having a gun, you just can't even fathom. It's like if you go far enough out there, well, yeah, farmers have got them because they've got to shoot cattle, you know, that might be sick or things like that. But the concept of having a gun is fundamentally different. Now, of course, America, that gets tied into don't take my guns, these are my rights, protect my family, da, da, da. Anyway, point is very, very, very different culturally. So let's not go all the way down the rabbit hole on that one. All right, so moving on to the banning of Parler and Gab. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. So both these platforms have been around for quite a while. Now, they do tend to attract one side of the political spectrum. And I do have a, in fact, I might have reversed this because I think this makes a bit more sense. Let's talk about this political spectrum. Because what I'm seeing, and I'm sure no matter where you're around the world, you see this as well, these platforms tend to be very much like this political group goes here and then this political group goes here and then everyone sits in their own echo chambers hearing the same thing over and over again. Now, the argument would be that Twitter is very left-leaning. Trump was pretty prominent on Twitter. I think he had 90 million something followers there, so inevitably he had a big voice. Arguably, there are a lot of every political spectrum on Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. The Gabs and the Parlers are obviously very Republican-leaning. Now, if you don't know what I mean by that, just go to gab.com, create an account if you haven't had one already. I mean, it is actually interesting to go through the process. If Gab is up, because it's not always up at the moment, do that. And it is walls of Republican right-wing information. Now, I don't necessarily mean that negatively. That's not, I don't want to sort of cast this connotation that everything that comes from one side of the political divide is negative and everything that comes from the other side is positive, because that's not it at all. But the echo chamber is much more clear over on those platforms than what it was on the more mainstream social media platforms. Now, to just sort of fill in this politics bit again, one of the things that I find is this discussion about things like inciting violence, it moves away so quickly from inciting violence to my political beliefs are better than your political beliefs. And it's always like, are you left or right? Are you Democrat or Republic? Are you a Nazi supremacist or are you a communist? And these terms are just absolutely ridiculous. And I'm really losing my patience with people on Twitter that pop up and say, yeah, everyone on Twitter, they're communists. It's like, all right, first of all, you need a dictionary. And second of all, no, like this is just a stupid premise. But equally, saying that everyone over on Gab or Parler or everyone who is a Republican is a Nazi or a white supremacist is also stupid, because it is one title which is getting broadly applied to everyone and it's meant in a very derogatory sense. And all rational discussion and debate tends to break down when you slap one of these ridiculous titles like that. And I really wish people just focus more on the content and the messaging and less on these titles. And I've tried really, really hard. I think I've done it okay on Twitter. When I've had these discussions with people, we can talk about inciting violence and all that sort of thing, but we're not talking about which political party do you prefer. It's more the messaging and what the messaging is causing people to do. So the Parler and Gab bit. Now, I might even start with Gab here, because Gab does have quite an interesting history and quite an interesting way that they have proceeded with their platform. Now, oh, this is interesting. I'm going to a Twitter thread of mine. Now, I started this Twitter thread 5 days ago, and this was after the writing was pretty much on the wall for Parler. Parler was going to die, which it subsequently has, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. I said, next prediction, whilst I'm on a bit of a roll, if Gab becomes the platform the existing violent content of Parler migrates to, and arguably there's a lot of it that's already there, the odds of it remaining easily accessible to the masses will be short. Now, I quote tweeted a tweet from Get On Gab, and that tweet no longer exists. That tweet is gone. Now, was it self-deleted? Was it deleted by Twitter? The Get On Gab Twitter account is still there. From memory, I can't think of a reason why that tweet would have been deleted. I didn't think it was insightful or anything like that, at least not permanently or forcibly deleted. So anyway, I'm going through this process. Like, okay, let's sign up. Let's have a look at these platforms. I'm just going through my own tweet thread here. Just sign up to Gab to take a look around. Several minutes for each page to load during registration. So it looks like they're getting absolutely hammered right now. Now, Gab has got a rich history of being booted off just about every platform that they've used. Now, to give you an example of what I mean by that, and then I'll come back to some of these other tweets. I'll expand my thread here. There's a quote here. from Gab. Over the past 4 years, we have been banned from multiple cloud hosting providers. This is true. Joint ditched them in 2018 after the Pittsburgh Tree of Life Synagogue massacre. GoDaddy also ditched them, as did Microsoft. As I continue here, they were booted off payment providers, including PayPal and Stripe. They were also kicked off Medium. They turned to cryptocurrency and were booted off Coinbase as well. They were booted off Square, so they couldn't take payments from Square. They tried to put an app in the Apple App Store. Apple said no. Tried to put one in Google, in their Play Store. Google says no. So they've basically been booted off pretty much everything that they've tried to use. So what do you do if you can't run on any of these platforms where you build your own infrastructure? And like put aside the politics and the controversy and everything for a while, this is a really, really interesting engineering challenge, right? So what do you do in a cloud-first era, which is so interdependent on other services, when you can't use cloud and you can't use the other services because they just don't want to let you play? So they've got to build out their own infrastructure. Now, inevitably, they've had a meteoric rise just over the last week, as a lot of the content that people would have consumed from Twitter and Facebook and then Parler has now gone to Gab. So they've had this massive scaling problem, which we as an industry started solving with cloud. Like, we made compute something which was consumable on demand. We made it elastic. We made it so that you didn't need to have too much and pay for what you didn't need. And we made it so you could always get more when you need it. And they can't do any of those things. All they can do is ship physical servers into a data center and run it off there. So it's a really fascinating challenge to think of, how do they actually make the platform work without access to any of the stuff that most of you out there or myself would use if we were going to build any service today, let alone a massively popular social media platform. But there's one thing that they're still using, which is cloud-based, and that's Cloudflare. Now, this makes it really interesting because we've now got the same party, and a party that I have a very close affinity with, a love for. I've done many things with Cloudflare before, making up new words all over the place today. Many things with Cloudflare before. I use them on all my things. I think they do a wonderful service. Should they continue to host Gab? I think if we look back and we look at the Daily Stormer situation and we look at the 8chan situation where they pulled the pin on both of them, and they were always the last to pull the pin. So they got so much pressure and, frankly, so much bad press out of the Daily Stormer situation in particular, and then a lot out of the 8chan situation. It was only when they had so much pressure that I think Matthew was left with very little choice but to pull the pin. Now, in his defense as well, the position he made at the time, and he wrote about pulling the pin on the Daily Storm, and he said something to the effect of, it should never fall to one person. Like, it shouldn't be his own discretion that he gets up one day, he's pissed at him, and he just goes, yep, we're just going to pull the plug on them. But inevitably, that's the way it is without clear and consistent guidelines across the industry. So even though all these other organizations have pulled their support for Parler, Cloudflare has maintained it. Now, Cloudflare is not a host, so don't get up at me saying Cloudflare should no longer host them. They proxy the traffic, and they protect the service. If Cloudflare disappears, there is no more protection for the service. And that's not just like, okay, the DDoS hordes are going to unleash on Gab. It also means all of the caching and things that they get in their hundreds of edge nodes around the world goes away. So the traffic to the origin increases, their costs go up. It makes it hard, even with legitimate traffic, once a service like Cloudflare disappears. Would I like to see Cloudflare disappear from Gab? I think based on what I've seen and based on what is obviously an industry consensus, yes, I would like to see them pull the pin on Gab. I'm not passionate about it enough to say that everyone should stop using Cloudflare until they do that. That's just not practical, and that's cutting off one's nose to spite your face. It's not in the same realm as Daily Stormer, quite frankly. That was very, very specifically white supremacist. Gab is very, very specifically right-wing politics, Republican content. A portion of that is then recalcitrant information. And if you're not convinced, just go to Gab and read it. Look, there's a lot of bullshit there. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm reading through this thread, like palming all the faces. Yeah, some of it is just absolutely nuts. Does it violate responsible community speech? A portion of it. But so does a portion on Twitter, and so does a portion on Facebook. And this is one of the arguments that has come up time and time and time again. And I've seen people point to various things on those platforms and say, here, look, here's here's the bad speech on Twitter. And you read a tweet and you go, yeah, that is bad. That really shouldn't be there. Does it violate their terms of service? Does it fall under what is not protected free speech or anything like that? The difference is, and this is where people seem to have trouble grasping the concept, it's not that Twitter and Facebook never have bad stuff. It's that their processes around dealing with it are fundamentally different to what it was with Parler and what it is with Gab. The incitement of violence is fundamentally different in terms of the way that is handled on the two platforms. Twitter and Facebook can't stop people from posting something nasty on the site. They can't stop it from going there in the first place. I mean, someone raised recently the fact that Christchurch massacre was live streamed. They're like, how on earth did you allow this to be live streamed? All right. Assuming we want live streaming to be a thing, and by virtue of me doing this now, I think it's probably a pretty good thing. Assuming we want to be able to do that, how do we actually manage to keep content off that might be the Christchurch massacre? How much AI do you need to try and figure out that this is someone running around shooting real people and it's not a kid with a Nerf gun in the backyard? How many false positives do you have? How much damage does it do to the platform and the confidence in being able to do a live stream like this? It's an extremely hard thing. But how does the platform deal with it once they can reasonably identify it? That's where the fundamental differences are. Now, that said, there are things that remain on Twitter that I just simply cannot explain in terms of how it's still there. And one of the accounts that's been pointed out to me multiple times is Iran's Ayatollah Khamenei just constantly calling Israel a cancerous growth and saying it should be destroyed. And there are still tweets there now to that effect. And by any reasonable definition, I reckon those tweets on face value look a lot worse than the tweets that Trump was binned for. I can't explain that. Is that politics? Is it that there is something about the nature of content in the US and the violence it might incite there is different to the content in the Middle East and the violence it might incite there? I don't know. But I agree with people when they say that some of this is not a good look for Twitter as well. And I would love to see this nut job booted off Twitter. So there's that. Now, on the Parler bit, in fact, before I go into Parler, let me have a look at some of these other comments in here while I catch my breath and take a coffee. So I think there's general consensus with those people here. Oliver says, I thought it was really interesting that the Pirate Bay founder said, basically he said Parler could have stayed online if they tried hard enough. I'm not sure that that's a reasonable assertion. I wonder what the basis of that assertion is. Now, the Pirate Bay, of course, is still online, but the Pirate Bay, I would imagine we've got a lot of very, very heavily cached content there that is mostly drawn from, they don't obviously host the torrents, they link through to torrents and things. I imagine their overheads and their complexity of remaining online are a tiny fraction of Parler, not just as Parler was a couple of weeks ago, but the massive sudden increase of traffic in Parler as well. The likes of Parler are also dependent on a lot more other services than what Pirate Bay would be. I imagine Pirate Bay is basically like, here's some web pages with some download links, and I don't think it's much more complex than that. So that might be a little bit disingenuous there. So someone's making the point here. If you're making a service, this is Sam McKenzie, if you're making a service and you're worried that your provider is going to take you down, then you should build on bare metal Linux and not rely on AWS, CF, et cetera. So here's an interesting thing with this. And of course, we're going to get to Parler in a moment and how AWS eventually killed them. As I said earlier on, like this is what we used to do. If you go back, let's say go back 15 years, probably a pretty safe bet. This is largely what you would do with any one of these platforms. And the problem here, multiple problems, and this is really the value proposition of cloud. So the problem was you would either over-provision, so you would have more infrastructure than what you needed. So you've got this much infrastructure, but you only need this much. So all of this bit up here, you're paying money for and you're not using. That's a very high overhead exercise. Or alternatively, you have this much infrastructure, but you need this much. Now you don't have enough. And all of this is under provisioning. And you're always playing this game of how do we have enough resources to be able to support the traffic and the growth? And you don't always know what the growth is going to be. Tell you what, Zoom didn't know what their growth was going to be 12 months ago. Another good example of sudden astronomical growth. So how do you always have enough for that growth, but also remain financially viable? Because even the likes of Parler and Gab, they're going to have money coming in from somewhere. Now, Gab is actively seeking donations. I keep saying it every time I load the page. I'm not even sure exactly how Parler monetized their customers, because it is a free service. And just like Facebook and Twitter, they got to monetize somehow because they got to pay the bills to keep the lights on. So it's an enormously expensive exercise. And then there's the lead times of new infrastructure. So I have seen, ironically, I think it was tweets from Gab about provisioning new infrastructure, and like there are trucks rolling up with new infrastructure. It takes a long time, even at the best of times, to order it and get it on trucks and ship it in and get it installed. It takes a long time compared to going into your AWS control panel and just turning the dial until you have enough cloud. So that the idea of building something ground up on the bare metal is very hard. Now, that's what Gab has done, but then they're still dependent on Cloudflare. I'm not sure what happens if Cloudflare drops them. In the past, I think it was after Daily Stormer. Daily Stormer went to, I forget the name of the other reverse proxy service, but it was another one. I think it might have been run out of the Netherlands. And they're like, look, we just want to make free speech for everyone. And their underlying providers booted them off as soon as they started taking on traffic like the Daily Stormer. So it's an extremely difficult thing to do. All right, building out your own infrastructure, a non-trivial exercise, particularly in today's era. There's a comment here from Andreas. Everyone is noticing how rules are not the same for everybody. Very easy to see. It's on purpose, in my view, and a bunch of others. We, and I think this might apply to my comments around things like the Ayatollah in Iran, being able to make comments which seem worse than Trump's. I think it's just really hard to justify why that content is still online. My personal preference is keeping in mind the opening about free speech and what is not protected speech, that shouldn't be there, and the world would be a better place if that content wasn't there. But I also know very little about Middle Eastern geopolitics, and it might be much more complex than what is on the surface there. So other comments here, a little bit around the Pirate Bay stuff. The Pirate Bay is also relatively tiny because of the use of magnet links. In 2012, it was just 90 megabytes. I mean, we have gone on a little bit since 2012, but that's still an interesting point here. Stefan says, one objected and one was against racial discrimination, Black Lives Matter. The other one was just based on proven lies and fear-mongering. This is the Trump tweets that were pulled. So look, I want to move on and talk about the Parler situation, because that to me was kind of interesting, because it was like, I am watching this service slowly die. Like the death warrant has been signed. It's going to go. And I'm just going to go back to a thread that I had here around Parler. And some of the interesting things with Parler was looking at the rationale of the organizations that stopped supporting them. And in fact, it was interesting, even after, so if we go back a little bit in the chronology, so the sort of death spiral was Apple saying, in 24 hours' time, we're going to boot you off the App Store because of incitement of violence and things like this. And then Google said nothing. They just took them off the App Store. So Google went in pretty hard, I thought. And you would think that given the spectrum of bad things, and that there are things out there which are, let's be honest, like much worse than Parler and Gab, that are, we take the Daily Storm example, it was very specifically white supremacist content, whereas these are social media platforms that have a skew towards that end. You would think that Google might have given them a bit of notice, but they didn't. They just nuked them straight away. Apple gave them notice, and then they nuked them. Fun fact, Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R, got booted off the App Store. There is another social connections app called Parlor, P-A-R-L-O-R, that has apparently just shot straight to the top of the charts, because you've got all of these people looking for their right-wing conspiracy theories that are suddenly ending up in like a chat for teenagers or something like that. So good on Parlor for doing so well out of this situation. There's always a winner somewhere. Okta kicked off Parler. And they've got a whole bunch of reasons. Their CEO, Todd McKinnon, did a little bit of a speech. I was looking at his video, a bit of an interview. And he said, and funnily enough, apparently Parler was using like a free Okta service. Now, I don't even know exactly what the service did, so I probably shouldn't laugh too much at being free. I use some services that are free in very reasonable ways, I think. But anyway, so Todd said, Parler was not even trying to suppress the threats of terrorism and incitement of violence. And again, we sort of come back to this point where it's not that the threats of terrorism and incitement of violence don't exist on all the platforms. It's just that some platforms try to keep it at bay. Others are just like YOLO free speech. And then he's talking about social media platforms. On other social media platforms, as long as they try and have a policy to follow the law. So he's sort of saying, you know, in the case of, say, Twitter or Facebook, he's wanting to see policies that try to apply the law and try to moderate content in a reasonable fashion. And the final quote here I put in my notes, he said there was a complete lack of trying to moderate content. Now, I know I'm flicking between Parler and Gab a little bit, but somewhere in one of my tweet threads, in fact, it's this one here, I embedded a video from the Gab CEO. Now, you kind of have to watch it. You really, really have to watch it. And I will link again to this in my notes. But a bunch of people did try to watch it and they had performance problems with Gab and they couldn't see it. So someone chimed in with a summary. So I'm just going to read his summary here. And I did actually add this to my tweet thread because I think this summary is quite reasonable. Summary: God is in charge, apps are evil, use a browser, remove the applications from your life. The president of the United States has just been silenced by communists. Pray first, then delete Facebook. They hide behind religion to protect hate speech. It's a pretty reasonable description if you watch the video. It's very, very hard to watch people talk like that and take it seriously. It really is. I mean, just watch the video. It's so at the end of the spectrum. And, yeah, I've said many, many times before, like, whenever we have a debate, there are very often two opposing viewpoints here. And usually anyone at either extreme end is completely wrong. And as you get closer towards the middle to more balanced, rational debate, you start to find the people who've actually got something insightful to say and are probably more on the money as representing the community sentiment. This bloke is at one very extreme end of that. And I think Cloudflare will ultimately pull Gab because of stuff like this, and that will be the end of it. Now, other bits on here. The whole idea of this being coordinated. Someone wrote a good tweet here. I'm just going to open this one up and I'll embed this. I actually embedded a thread from Jack Dorsey of Twitter, and he said... I'll just read you the initial thread and the bit I quoted. So Jack starts, I do not celebrate or feel pride in having to ban real Donald Trump from Twitter or how we got here. After a clear warning, we'd take this action. We made a decision with the best information we had based on threats to physical safety on both Twitter. Was this correct? And then he goes on and on and on. But the bit in here he said, which I quoted, which I thought was quite interesting, is he says, companies came to their own conclusions or were emboldened by the actions of others. Now, this is referring to all the different companies that either contributed to killing Parler or have so far dropped Gab. Now, when you think about all those companies, and just off the top of my head, it's the ones I just mentioned, Square, Stripe, Coinbase. I don't think I mentioned Zendesk, but that'd be another one of them. Apple, Google, Microsoft, Joyent, DigitalOcean, all of these different companies have all independently come to the conclusion. Well, actually, let me rephrase it because some people argue the word independently. Have all come to the conclusion that these services, and as it relates to Trump's account as well, should be dropped. They all occupy very, very different parts of the technology landscape. They are, for the most part, and I'm trying to think of exceptions, American companies, and they are predominantly, by virtue of being a technology company and by virtue of being American, almost certainly in Silicon Valley. Is there an organized cabal trying to kill this content? And I just can't say that without thinking about the bats and 5G and coronavirus anymore, because it feels like we're going down this conspiracy theory path again. And if we sort of applied Occam's razor to this and we said, what is the simplest explanation of this? The simplest explanation of this is that all of these platforms are concluding themselves and perhaps, as Jack has said here, emboldened by the actions of others as part of this, but concluding themselves that this content just shouldn't be there. And it's such a broad range. It's not just that, it's even Parler's lawyers. Parler's lawyers dumped them. Now, I don't think you can call them a Silicon Valley tech company. I don't know where they're based, but they're lawyers. They're not a tech company. Even the lawyers were like, no, this shit's just too weird for us as well. Like, we're jumping ship on this. And everyone is coming to these same conclusions. And I just don't understand how anyone can sort of sit there and go, all of these different organizations are all deciding that this content shouldn't be there. Oh, it must be them who's wrong, you know, unless they are convinced that it's some sort of conspiracy QAnon style, except it would be on the other side, wouldn't it? But it'd be, I even lose track of the different conspiracy groups. So I don't think it is that. I think Jack's point about perhaps coming to their conclusions and being emboldened by the actions of others is very true. And I would also argue that that is inevitably what contributed to Cloudflare dropping Daily Storm and dropping 8chan, and will possibly contribute to Cloudflare dropping Gab as well. Now, before I go on, because there is a little bit more, I just want to have a look at some of the other comments in here. And look, I won't be able to see everything because there's a heap that are scrolling through here. So I'm just trying to eyeball it and see if there's anything of particular interest. So there is a good comment here. This is in response to the guy saying, build your own infrastructure. So Stein says, who will rent you the servers? If you're buying the bare metal, who will rent you the rack space? And the thing is that even if you try and build this out yourself, Gab style, you are still going to be dependent on other parties. There are other parties who, with sufficient motivation, will pull the pin on you. You cannot build your own internet. If you're seeing anyone say, yeah, we're just going to build our own internet, no, it doesn't work like that. There's a comment, I won't even put the name on it, but just a comment on here about white supremacists. And again, I just want to, I feel that when we use these terms and we use them very broadly, so if, I'll give you an example, saying, oh, Parler's full of white supremacists or Gab's full of white supremacists, I don't think that does anyone any favors. I don't think it does any favors to, if we put this back in political senses again, to the left side, because suddenly it's like you're just painting everyone with the same brush. And within there, there's a broad spectrum of people. Some of them have some leanings that way, but others are just outright nut jobs inciting violence. And you put everyone in that category and it marginalizes them. I wrote something about conspiracy theories and coronavirus probably about 6 months ago. And it was particularly around how people were convinced that 5G was spreading coronavirus, which of course is just patently absurd. But I was referring to the fact that when people start to get marginalized, they do seek out others with the same view. And they look for things that confirm their own confirmation bias or speak to their own confirmation bias. And my worry is that when we say you are in the same category with everyone else, even if they're a little bit on the fringe, then suddenly they become what we define them as. And I don't think using terms like white supremacist is really helping anyone. And I'd much rather talk about things like the incitement of violence, which is the behavior rather than a broad generalization of which group you belong to. I'm going to skip over some of the funny stuff and look for content of relevance and use to this. Burton does ask a good question here. Burton said, have you ever felt sucked into the conversation on these sites after reading the content, changing your perspective? Look, I would say I don't know that my perspective has changed a lot. And look, I'm in the lucky position of not having to vote for anyone in America. I don't even have anyone here I really want to vote for. But I'm conscious that I live in an echo chamber as well. Like, we all live in echo chambers where we're speaking to people of our own, mostly our same sort of predispositions of views. Even what I'm reading here, I'm sure that the people I'm reading here are not an even representation distribution of the political spectrum, say, in the US. The people I know on Facebook, I've gotten to the point where I have muted client chain, changed name. Let me try that again. I've completely removed friends who were climate change deniers. I'm getting my conspiracy theories mixed up now. That filters out another voice on the topic. Now, I think most of us agree it's a crazy voice, but I want that out of there because I just get sick of saying that shit and I want to focus on actually fixing things that are actually serious scientific problems. But the point being is that you do get surrounded by people of your same mindset. It is fascinating to go to Gab. And honestly, I encourage all of you, like, just go to Gab and read it, not to sort of go there and laugh at how crazy it is. Like, there are bits of that, don't get me wrong. But just to appreciate, like, the bulk of people out there, the numerous people out there that have views that are just fundamentally different to our own. Now, it's not to say you're going to go there and be swayed and suddenly you're going to sort of flip sides or something like that. But there are a lot of people out there with very different viewpoints. Now, I find it kind of fascinating to read some of these threads and particularly read the comments as well. And look, honestly, my conclusion from that, I'll see if I can even get to Gab at the moment and see what's on there. I do have a Gab profile, by the way. I don't think I'm going to post anything on there. I've got 7 followers. Incidentally, just to sort of reinforce how politically aligned Gab is, when you sign up for a Gab account, you automatically follow 3 people. Now, because if you go to my profile and you see me following these 3 people or 3 accounts, it is not me who has followed them. This happened automatically. Number 1 was Gab Help. This is just at Help. Number 2 was Andrew Tauber. He's the CEO of Gab. Number 3 is Trump. So regardless of which way you want to vote, if you sign up on Gab, you are automatically following Trump, which may also account for how many followers Trump has. He's got 1.2 million followers. Now, this is compared to the 90 million plus followers that he had on Twitter, which is interesting. So if I go back to the Gab homepage, so per my previous point, they are looking for donations. They've apparently covered 71% of operational expenses this month. Not sure how up to date that is. At the moment, it's looking like I'm not going to be able to tell you the actual content on the homepage. It looks like it does some sort of funky async calls to try and fill in the content, which it is at present unable to do because it doesn't want to load. So I'm going to give this whole page a good hard refresh and see if I can load that and come back to it while I'm reading some of the other comments here. Now, Scott says, when the blood-sucking lawyers bail out, it's bad. I think when even lawyers are like, we're not going to be able to monetize this. That's a problem. Now, of course, it was the lawyers that dropped Parler. One would think just from a pure economics perspective, the lawyers would have to be looking at Parler thinking, I don't think we're going to get paid, right? Because where's the money going to come from? Okay. Now, Oliver's made a point here. I think an Amazon exec literally stated in a sworn affidavit that it wasn't coordinated. It wouldn't surprise me, but devil's advocate just for a moment, if it was coordinated, I don't think it would be hard to make it look like it wasn't coordinated, if you know what I mean. But I just think that the likelihood, the Occam's razor of this, is that it was not coordinated. Now, just on this as well, and I think I put a note in here somewhere around this. So Parler is now trying to sue Amazon for antitrust and breach of contract. I'm not sure where they're going to get the money to do that. And I think the likelihood of being able to take on one of the world's largest companies and win in a case like that is extremely remote, but they are trying to have a bit of a go at them just there. I did just get the Gab page loaded. Now, of course, I'm going to largely see the CEO. And again, like going back to his talk before, that video, which was, I read out the description of it, it's obviously very religious orientated, and then one of the recent posts here is with Steve Bannon, who, again, I'm going to try not to use generic words, let's just say has had some controversy around him. So that's interesting. And then every single time I read anything here, and of course a lot of this is retweeted by the CEO, it's extremely political again. Notice how every Democrat who cited violence as a reason for voting to impeach President Trump supports killing babies and abortions. Oh, God. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. If I go to Explore, this will load a whole bunch of other content, which is basic. See, this is sort of the echo chamber thing again. Because you are forced to automatically follow this guy on sign up, your timeline is full of this guy's content. There's some other stuff in here. Yeah, Lauren Boebert. Now, keeping in mind, again, as an Australian, I'm not aware of a lot of your political commentators in the US or your news anchor men and women and all this sort of stuff. Maybe she's a news lady. Are the Democrats so devoid of an agenda that they'll continue to impeach Trump in the Senate after he leaves office? Okay, so that's another Trump thing. Okay. There's, what else is in here? Storm is upon us with a skull icon. Just in, President Trump reportedly has more pardons ready to go, as well as executive orders. Andrew again, how Facebook incubated the insurrection. And it just goes on and on and on and on. And that the concern I'd have with people going to this platform is that it is certainly based on what's coming up in the automatic explorer, so it's just gab.com/explorer, it is 100% aligned to one political side of the spectrum. So it's going to be very hard for anyone to be on this platform and have any sort of balanced view of the world. Now, people might argue that Twitter or Facebook is very, very left aligned, but I'll tell you what, you can go to Twitter or Facebook and explore. And even for me, who's going to get things tailored to my audiences, which are more likely going to be like the Silicon Valley kind of people, I still see a lot from both sides. All right, and back into the comments just here. Nigel says they should have hired Giuliani. I think Giuliani is trying to get paid. That is interesting. I'm just seeing the number of friends I have in here now is actually quite funny. I reckon it's important we understand the position and technical threat of Gab, Parler, et cetera, so we can help as technical experts to understand the threat of them, which is a comment from Lars. It's an interesting one because the threat, so to speak, is such a subjective thing where we, and I don't want to chuck myself into any sort of collective group here either, so let's put it the other way around. Let's say Amazon. Amazon said, okay, that the threat is that they're not doing enough to stem the incitement of violence, and that the threat, or the risk rather, is that it could lead to actual serious harm. Now, I've also seen commentary saying that all of the people that have so far been identified as having stormed the Capitol building the other day were not actually on Parler or coordinating on Parler. I don't feel that that's completely accurate, and we're going to talk about the Parler scraping of data, not data breach, in a moment as well, which seems to be indicating something quite different. Other comments in here. And Tammy Corr's made a comment here. The first post is from Andrew Torbus, CEO of Gab again, saying that apparently they have zero tolerance for threats of violence and illegal activity. It just doesn't seem to quite reconcile with what's actually happening on the platform. Now, keep in mind as well, and I mentioned briefly Telegram and Signal before, end-to-end encrypted applications that have been there for years. I've certainly used both of them for years. Usually when people want to have a discussion that they can have confidence that no one's going to be able to intercept that at any intermediary point. They've upticked massively in popularity. And part of the commentary I've seen is people saying, well, again, now all that's happening is you're just pushing these same people into corners of the internet that are harder to monitor. Now, part of this is true, and of course, the challenge with encryption is the moral neutrality of it. So you can use encryption to do very good things. All of what you're looking at now is sent over encrypted channels. That's great. So not only is no one being, it doesn't really matter if anyone eavesdrops on it, it's public. No one's able to intercept and modify it, for example. We can also have confidence that it is going to the place we think it's going to. And all of that's fantastic. But of course, we can also use that to do nasty stuff because of this moral neutrality again. But to the point I made earlier on, it's like once people are forced into, let's say, the likes of Telegram and Signal, this is no longer a broadcast mechanism on a web page where you go into your browser and you type gab.com and you get all of this content. This is now much more targeted. There's a whole bunch of people who are not going to be sitting on the fringes absorbing this content and forming views that they may not have were not so easily accessible. Now, Bonnie Lee's made a comment here. Just because someone is following someone, it does not automatically mean they support them. A lot of news organizations follow Trump, not because they agreed, but for newsworthy info. Look, I didn't follow Trump on Twitter, but I'd often go and have a look at his account just because it is noteworthy content. It is globally relevant information. So I think that's a very, very important point. Although following does imply, let's just say, interest. Now, I've had occasions before, and some of the people watching this will know who I'm talking about when I describe this without naming the individual, but there's someone in the technology community that I knew and I was following. In fact, there's a couple of people that I've known I've been following who have since fallen into very controversial circumstances. let's say this, and I have had people personally DMing me saying, you shouldn't follow this person because of what they've just done or what they've just said. Because following is seen as, if not endorsement, at least having an interest in the individual. Now, in one of these cases, the person who people were, I guess, cancelling, to use that term, yeah, deserved it. So I was like, yep, okay, that's a fair point. Someone else who's a very prominent person in the industry who had said some things which were a little bit too edgy, I got DM saying, you shouldn't follow this person anymore. You know, this was like literally other people trying to cancel them. Now, I went back to the person on DM and I said, well, look, I don't think this is a reasonable thing to ask because of ABC. But I am just conscious that that association, and as it relates to Gab, automatically following both the CEO and automatically following the president are a little bit on the nose. Now, there's a comment here from Jamie. How is the US government measuring foreign activity on social platforms whose purpose is to influence voters with disinformation to achieve a desired outcome? Is this monitoring feasible? Well, this sort of takes us back again to 2016 and Russian interference in the election process. It is an extremely difficult thing. Like, we are seeing lots of press from the likes of Twitter and Facebook about how many accounts they've nuked because they've been sock puppets for foreign states. It is an extremely difficult thing. And this sort of, and look, it's fascinating as well, right? This whole idea that a foreign power can go and create accounts that have gradual bits of influence, but you have enough of them with enough influence and enough momentum that it can actually influence the outcomes of things like elections. That is amazing, isn't it? It's a crazy, crazy time. Michael says, following off the ability to sell your follower.
This on the web.
Oh, geez. Speaking of always listening conversations. Following offers the ability to sell your follow for monetization, though. So there's certainly that as well. And I guess to some extent, this is what I do. Like, I have sponsors and advocacy programs and things like this because I have a strong enough following that there is a way of very indirectly, it's not like I'm selling it, but there's a very indirect way of monetizing that. So that's a fair point. The follow accounts are valuable that way. So Shiva... Hi, Shiva. Shiva is asking, I'm curious what the interface of Gab and Parler is. Is it like Twitter or Facebook? Well, the Parler interface is, there isn't one because it's dead. The Gab interface, when you spin through it, for all intents and purposes, it looks a little bit like Facebook. You can infinitely scroll through a whole bunch of stuff that is very, very Republican aligned content. it's all about like election fraud and stuff. But if you're interested in what it looks like, it looks just like a normal social media platform. And really it's just the content which is the thing that really stands out in terms of the bias here. Interesting. Other comments here. Can you unfollow Gab accounts that you're following from the start? That's a good question. Let's see if I can unfollow a Gab account. Okay, let's see if I can get to my profile. It's taken a while to load. I was actually timing this. I just opened up the dev tools, look at the network tab, and it was regularly taking like a minute or more just to load my profile, which is interesting. So that's still loading. After it loads, I will see if I can unfollow. I might try and unfollow the Gab account, like the Gab help account. I probably don't need that. I don't like my chance of that. Andrew McCullen says, dangerous thing to ask. No one is really focused on Russia, China, et cetera, really their perspectives. We're only focusing on Western tech point. You do wonder, don't you, about folks in more adversarial nations sitting back watching this. Like, is this, are they going, oh, this is really good? You know, it's like, just watch everything self-destruct from a distance. I think that would be something really fascinating to hear from someone who actually understands the political landscape in those places. Now, I'm going to move on to this scraping thing in a moment. And to Shiva's question, do you just need an email address to sign up to Gab? Yeah, look, it's just an email address. It's pretty straightforward. Again, it's that the bit that's not straightforward at the moment is they're obviously getting so smashed by traffic that it's actually hard for them to stay up and stay feasible, which another tangent. There's been a bunch of discussion about coordinated denial of service attacks here against Gab to try and knock them offline. Now, look, that's not good either, right? I don't like a lot of the content I see on there. I would like to see them I'd like to see it disappear, to be quite honest. I would like to see it done the right way. I don't think the idea of people mounting what is ultimately a legal activity to try and knock it offline is the right thing to do. So that's not a healthy thing. Now, at the moment, I don't know, like maybe if that continues, then there'll be enough pressure on Cloudflare to pull the pin on them, and maybe I was going to say the ends will justify the means. I don't think it does. I don't think the illegal activity justifies the end. But we'll see. I'm not sure how long they can keep going with this being so unusable as well. And honestly, like if you don't believe me, just go in and try it. Like try and browse around and load stuff. Try the registration process. It's so consistently unusable. Maybe it will just die organically because the people on there will be like, look, I'm really, really pro-Trump and anti everything else, but this is too hard even for me. I'm going to go and, I don't know, like play with my family or something different for a while. So for folks sort of listening to this later on, there are a lot of really interesting comments here coming up in the live chat, and they will, of course, be still available on the YouTube video after this is all done. Stein says, I'm wondering if the platforms that don't enforce their own TOS still think the fact that they have a TOS will cause them less legal trouble, and sadly, they might be right. I don't know. I think it's less about having terms of service, which are easy to do, and more about what is in there and how they're enforced. And again, this seems to be really the only sticky point. Like you're always going to end up with websites and platforms that attract more people from one political party than another political party, or one religion than another religion, or one race, or like whatever. That's fine. I think that the issue here is more about, are they doing enough in practice to actually combat things that are actively harmful? That is the constant point that we come back to. Okay, so Parler and the scraping of the data. Now, this is sort of an era, and frankly, you know, I think it's been an era for like the last 4 years, and I don't want to just blame Trump on this. I think it's almost like the evolution of online life. It can be very difficult to tell the truth from fiction. Time and time again. I mean, how many times do you see a news article published somewhere and you're like, hang on a moment, you know, is this actually right? How much is this legit? So when the news started breaking of a Parler hack, I got up one morning and I guess as often happens for all of us, but particularly when I'm not in America and just for context, it's like 9 a.m. here at the moment. It's going to be mid-afternoon somewhere Pacific time in the U.S. A lot happens whilst I'm asleep. So I got up and there was news of like a 75 terabyte data breach of Parler. Now, this was just as though going offline. And I sort of went through and I shared information as I found it. And it pretty quickly became clear that this was not a data breach in the sense of there was a vulnerability in the service somewhere and someone got data they shouldn't have. This wasn't SQL injection or an exposed database or a backup left somewhere publicly facing. It wasn't that. Now, what appears to have happened here is that a huge amount of information that was publicly facing by design has been scraped and archived. Now, this, just before people get upset, like this is not to say this is all right. We'll come back to that. But this is not a data breach. It's not, as some people have said, scans of your driver's licenses. This was one of the things I saw. You know, people had to provide identity data in order to sign up or in order to verify their account. Therefore, there's all these scans of driver's licenses and things, which would be a massive, massive personally identifiable information leak. It's not that. This is a scrape of the service. Now, a lot of this, if you're interested in sort of following it and seeing how this is all panned out, there is a Twitter account, a lady by the name of Crash Override. Now, her handle is donk, D-O-N-K, underscore, E-N-B-Y. Now, she is obviously both extremely smart and very interesting to actually read through her thread and watch what's been happening here. But the nutshell explanation of this is that her, along with some other folks as well, have decided to archive Parler. And they decided to archive it before it went offline, knowing that Amazon had given them a deadline, which I think at the time was only about 36 hours. But it sounds like she'd already been scraping some information to try and do some aggregated analysis of the data. And then as that deadline came, there was a community effort which pulled down many, many tens of terabytes. I'm not sure exactly how much worth of data. Now, a lot of that data is information which was by design public anyway. A lot of that data also includes information which may have later been deleted by the people that published it. But of course, it's the internet, so nothing's ever really deleted. It also seems like a lot of that data had metadata, which would have been scrubbed on platforms like Twitter and Facebook because privacy. Now, that metadata would include things like geolocation on things like videos and photos. So what's been happening now is people have been pouring through these parlor posts, analyzing things like metadata, geolocation data, and doing things like plotting it on the Capitol building. And this is where it gets fascinating, where it sort of contradicts the point I made a little bit earlier on about some commentary saying the folks who stormed the Capitol building were not on parlor organizing things. Well, yeah, maybe not, but a whole bunch of other people who were there at that time based on the data do appear to have been on parlor. And if you have a bit of a scroll through her tweets, she's echoing a lot of published information. So, for example, there's a story here from Joseph Cox, great InfoSec journalist. He says, new, here's how archivists are digging through the freshly scraped parlor data and using it to pinpoint crimes at the Capitol, scripts for cleaning GPS data, extracting videos and more. And this is actually really fascinating. We'll talk about the legal side of it and the ethics side of it in a moment. But it's really fascinating to think that there is that much data available. Now, once you start mapping information, like physically on a map, or mapping it back to individuals, mapping it back to folks that we now know were in the Capitol building, because a lot of them are actually being identified. She's retweeted some information here from the FBI of photos that they've had about individuals that they're seeking from the Capitol building. And of course, the community is now taking those photos and then going to the parlor data and trying to join all the dots and figure out who it is. Of course, the FBI is very well equipped for what they do. But when you've got terabytes worth of data, and one would imagine thousands of people probably trawling through this, trying to join dots now, it's actually quite fascinating to see what they're coming up with. Now, I had an argument on Twitter with someone who was very upset about this. And again, that the shame about this whole discussion is, rather than sort of focusing on the actions and the messages and the incitement of violence and everything, it gets very, very focused on, are you from this side of the political spectrum or that side? So I would say this person is from the right side of the political spectrum. And they were very upset that the word hacker wasn't being used. So this person's a hacker. So, well, they scraped publicly facing data. And again, we're going to talk about the legalities of that in a moment. But did they exploit a vulnerability? Did they gain access to data which was not intended to be accessible? Like, it's not that. I think that is a little bit of an overloaded term, but, you know, then again, her pinned tweet literally has hacker as the second word. It's a news story. The hacker who archived Parler explains how she did it. But the point that we're sort of getting to here now is, should this have happened? Should it be okay to grab this data in this fashion? And you'd have to think, if we put the boot on the other foot, and we said someone found how to scrape all this data from Facebook, well, I guess, first of all, they'd have a hell of a lot more data than, you know, tens of terabytes. But let's imagine they did that, even a subset of Facebook. They scraped a huge amount of this data, had my posts, most of my posts are public, my metadata, my messages, my connections, and they're able to join dots. How would we feel about it? I think this is the darker end of the gray end of the spectrum. And if we think back to things like Cambridge Analytica, where large volumes of data were obtained by another party and used in ways which we hadn't intended them to be used when we published it, I think there'd be outrage. It would also massively violate Facebook's terms of services. And I would argue this probably violates Parler's terms of services too, but it's not like they're going to send the lawyers after her because, well, their lawyers dumped them. I mean, other than the lawyers that are now trying to take AWS to court. So I feel sympathy for why someone would want to do this under the circumstances. I think it is on the very, very gray end of the spectrum though. And if it were not for the fact that Parler's basically dead, I'd be a little bit worried about being the person that did this and very, very publicly spoke about it as well. So it'll be interesting to see what else comes out of this data. We're already seeing a lot of really interesting insights. It probably shouldn't have been obtained in this way, but it is there now, and it is out there pretty extensively torrented as well. So That's, as they say, pee that is never getting removed from the pool. All right, I want to have a look at some of the other comments that are here. And I am sort of getting towards the end of everything that I had on the list just here as well. So there's a comment here. Are the issues of Amazon's claim against Parler sufficiently like this that Amazon would be prompted to act differently in one case or the other? One of the things that I've seen a lot of people say is, if Amazon can do this to Parler, they can do it to anyone. I made the comment, it's like, yes, Amazon can do it to anyone who stands up a massively successful social media platform that attracts a lot of extremely violent views and is used to orchestrate a storming of a Capitol building. Yes, if that's the service you're building, then Amazon could do this to you as well. So I don't think that what we're seeing here should give anyone any concern whatsoever about using Amazon. Or if we look at the other organizations that have been Gab, I am not concerned about using Stripe because they stopped taking payments to a website that has a whole bunch of very, very insightful data on it. That's insightful with a C-I-T-E. Not a lot of insightful the other way. So no, that doesn't concern me at all. I don't think that's a problem. So comment from Shiva here, I'm asking because of the troll phenomenon where operations have become a little more sophisticated. I'm curious to know how we can know if the interaction on Parler and Gab is by legit humans. I think maybe the macro observation here is that, and it's almost like the Poe's Law thing where you sort of get to the point where you can't tell parody from real life. So some of the stuff on Gab, and incidentally, I wasn't actually able to load my Gab profile. Maybe I can. Let me see if I can unfollow Gab Help. How do you unfollow someone? Oh, good question. Gab Help. Following. Oh, here's a button. I think it worked. What if I reload my page now? No. Didn't work. I think the request time. You know what? I'm literally finding myself before I click things on Gab having to open the dev tools. So when something doesn't work, I can see if there's like an error in the console or a timed out request. So if I hit the following button now, it makes a request to unfollow. Oh, that has responded with 200, but it still says following. What's in the response? JSON request, following true. Blocking false, blocked by false, muting false. But I've still got the following button. And then if I hit it again, it just issues the same request, which is still pending. Still pending. I'll just like finish my dialogue and then I'll come back and see if this Gab response is ever finished. Right, so to Shiva's point, I mean, this is the challenge. How do you tell legitimate content from troll-like content? There are blue ticks in Gab, so one would assume that that is a concept of verification, as far as I know. Oh, look, it finished. Did it finish? It did finish. It took 40.34 seconds after hitting the unfollow link. And it's returned with exactly the same JSON response as the one immediately before that, which took 1.98 seconds. For fun, we'll click it again because it looks like when you try to unfollow, it doesn't actually do it. We'll see how long this one takes. That one took 1.68 seconds. So it's like 2 seconds, 40 seconds, 2 seconds, just all over the place. All right, so as best I can tell, I can't unfollow, and I don't know because of it's sort of timing out or you just can't unfollow the official Gab account. All right, so knowing what is legit or not is the same problem, I think, as every other platform, unless there is some concept of verification. But again, it's a little bit of Poe's Law, which is it's a little bit hard to tell the crazy from the intentionally crazy from the trolley stuff. Just Shiva, go through and make an account and just have a look. Just it doesn't make you. I was going to use one of those broad terms again. It doesn't mean that you have a political allegiance that way. Call it research. Now, Chuck says, Amazon has no obligation of equal treatment of their customers outside not discriminating against protected classes. So complaints around that have no actual weight. Well, I guess we'll see. And I think the challenge that we keep coming back to is should a private enterprise be able, well, then first of all, they're public, but you know what I mean. So should an organization that is not a government entity be able to make judgment calls like this? Someone gave me an example the other day where they were talking about should a cake shop not making a cake for a gay couple because of religious beliefs. Now, that there are different views on it. My view is that's just outright discrimination. That is a very, very different situation to trying to prohibit something which causes active harm. So the first thing is a religious theological view. And there's another argument about whether that should happen or not. The other one is like, should you enable what could ultimately result in deaths? And obviously it did with Capitol Building. Now, whether it's the death thing or whether we go back to what is not protected free speech and things like encouraging people to suicide, like that sort of stuff just shouldn't be there at all. So in terms of Amazon, I think in this position, their rationale for it is pretty clear cut. There's a comment here. The Turing tests have been passed as a result of bots getting smarter, and the same rate humans are getting dumber. this is a comment from Dylan Beatty, which is probably a fair comment in terms of how do some of these accounts actually get on there. But anyway, love the Gadsden flag that's been going around with the motto replaced by what's EXIF data. So for those of you wondering what EXIF data is the data which you'll find attached to photographs. But it's the metadata. It's everything from the geolocation through to the focal length of the lens, you know, whatever else it may be. And it is kind of curious that looks like it hasn't been scrubbed. Now, one thing I'm not sure about, and rather than say this is the case, I'd rather just say, I don't know, I've read this, it sounds feasible. It seems like a lot of the content which was uploaded is available in original source format, but then maybe it was scrubbed and optimized and everything else before it actually went on the front page. You would imagine that if you went to Parler and uploaded a 5 megabyte JPEG, they're not going to serve a 5 megabyte JPEG to everyone. They're going to do some level of optimization, but what happens to that original 5 megabyte JPEG which was uploaded? So, folks, I think we're sort of getting to the end of this now. Just to kind of round out on it, and I'm looking through the notes here, this was really the most of what I wanted to cover. There were a couple of things that sort of popped up personally for me, which has been fascinating because, like, I'm all for having a little bit of an argument online if people deserve it. Let's put it that way. But some of this got pretty crazy. I did get a death threat. So I had one death threat last week. And I'll give you some context about where that came from. And to be clear, like this is not my first death threat, but I've also never had any which warranted taking them seriously at all. Someone's like, well, why don't you go to the police? It's like, the police have a lot of stuff to do. Now, I can't actually see this one anymore because I did report it. In fact, it wasn't the tweet I reported. It was a DM that followed the tweet. But the joy of incognito mode. Oh, you're unable to view this tweet because this account limits. So this person completely changed their profile. So here was the context. I tweeted, when was this? 6 days ago. I said, looks like Google has just binned Parler app from the Play Store. The website is still directly accessible and sitting behind CloudFront. Bets on when Amazon will terminate the service. And I quote tweeted someone else's tweet here. Now, I thought that was mostly just commentary about what has happened. Maybe because I said bets on when Amazon will terminate the service, someone got a little bit upset. And in a tweet, which is now no longer visible, they said something along the lines of you better hope people don't come over there and get you. Now, I thought this was quite funny, and I replied, given basically nobody can fly to Oz right now, yeah, don't reckon anyone's coming here to get me, right? Because it's like coronavirus. So no one's going to get on a plane from America and come here to get me because you'd have to go through 14 days of quarantine, and you want to be really, really set on getting me to go through that pain. Anyway, so that resulted in DMs that started referencing my physical security in my house and references to a noose. So that got reported through Twitter because Twitter does have a way of dealing with this, which is kind of ironically the reason we're having this whole discussion in the first place. But that was more amusing than anything else. Someone else made a comment here. So I said, I give it 50-50 odds that by the time I wake up tomorrow, Amazon has either pulled the pin on Parler, Google style, or given them a similar ultimatum to Apple. Given what we've seen today and what I saw spending some time on the platform, it wouldn't surprise me in the least. Now, that tweet did age really well because, of course, Amazon did pull the pin on Parler. Now, instead of it being when I got up the next morning, it was about 6 or 7 hours after I got up. So I didn't get it quite right, but I thought I was pretty close. Someone here says, well, this post didn't age well. Parler app available for download on their website. Parler up and running much more smoothly than yesterday, even with the huge influx. Oh, and Troy, don't ask me for any more donations. And your email subscription has been cancelled and marked as spam. Now, I'm not sure exactly how I asked this person for donations. I'm just looking at their Twitter avatar, Patriot Party of the United States of America with a lion. Do you do lions? I thought you did eagles. I'm not sure where the lion comes from. Retired and enjoying life, unless replying to tweets from me. MAGA, not GOP. I block trolls. No DMs, please. Catch up with me on Parler. Yeah, good luck with that now. Gab, won't take too long. So anyway, there's sort of been a bit of that, but honestly, like, that's just been more amusing than threatening. There's a little bit of me who's like kind of tempted to retweet or quote tweet some of this, but enough people sort of read through my replies to other people that inevitably people sort of chime in and share their own views on that, which does get a little bit funny. So I just wanted to comment, so to Scott's question here, did you report that to the police? I think I sort of covered that, like no, it was a Twitter account that had about 12 followers. It looked like a brand new account, didn't even have an avatar. Honestly, I'm not going to waste their time on that because there's nothing they can do with it. There are certainly times, without going into detail, I think Scott knows some of these incidents where I have escalated through other channels before, but that was not going to be one of them where I needed to do that. Burton, are you worried about everybody knowing where you live? Do you wish your details was hidden? Well, like I said, no one's going to come get me at the moment, are they? Well, you've got to be in Australia to come get me. And even then, like, you've got to pretty much be in Queensland. You can't really come from New South Wales and come get me at the moment. I think we kind of lose our minds a little bit about the address thing, and this is not to sort of get off topic from the broader thing. We lose our minds a little bit about that because addresses are something which is so easily established for most people anyway. When you look at people who really genuinely need to keep their addresses hidden, let's say it's a battered partner trying to hide from their spouse. Like, there's a lot of effort that has to go in to actually not be discoverable. And even then, often that's not sufficient. So people that want to find you will find you. And there are lots of different ways of doing that. And that doesn't concern me at all. So I appreciate the concern, but no, that's not something I lose sleep about. And honestly, in cases like that, I find it more amusing than anything else. I don't engage. Like, as soon as I see stuff like that, it's like, that's it. I will, at the very, very least, mute, so I just don't see any more of it anymore. But when it's actually threatening, Twitter does have the controls to report that and take action against it. And I think that's probably a good place to end the whole thing, because if you see stuff like that, and people who have said to me in defense of Parler and Gab, you know, oh, there's bad stuff on Twitter and Facebook as well. So if you see that, report it. I've reported a lot of stuff before. Report it, because they do have a duty of care to make sure that stuff doesn't get out of control, and they don't get it right all the time. Again, I think the Iranian Ayatollah stuff, they need to do better with. But there are controls and there are processes. They're not perfect, but they're a lot better than what there are in other places, and that's probably the right place to finish on this. So thank you very much for watching this. I'll try and get everything with all the links to all the things that I've mentioned up. It's probably going to be tomorrow because I've got a great big list of URLs and things like this. Next week, I will cover a few other things that I didn't cover today. I will cover the male chastity belt ransomware. Stay tuned for that one. That's epic. The Ubiquity data breach as well. Hopefully, I actually have more information about that for next week too. And next week, it will just be interesting to see if Gab is actually still a thing as well. I'm going to go with 50-50 bets on that again. Please don't send me a death threat because I've said I reckon there's a 50% chance Gab's going to be dead in a week. Time will tell. I will see you then. Thanks, folks.